Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, your host, Caroline Foran, author of Owning It and the Confidence Kit, or Own It, which it will be called in the US if you're listening from there, and it will be out in America from April 2nd. The Confidence Kit will follow in the autumn, or the fall, as you might say. And this week, I am so thrilled to be joined by my good friend Georgie Crawford, who has an amazing podcast herself called The Good Glow. I'm sure you've heard of it. If you haven't, get on it. It's about self-care. She talks to really, really amazing women about their own self-care. And I featured on her series and got such an overwhelmingly positive response. And Georgie is just, she's just one of the good ones. She has had such a turbulent 2 years. She, as she will tell you herself, gave birth to her beautiful baby girl, Pia, and she was getting geared up to go back to work and enjoying life as a new mum, and she found a lump on her breast and was very quickly diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. Had to go through the chemo, lose her hair, everything, and she very bravely went on radio pretty soon after she found out about the cancer and had an interview and talked about what it was like to find out. And really her aim was to spread awareness and get people checking themselves who were under the age of 50, because I think so many of us think that it's not something that's going to affect us. And obviously the theme of this whole podcast is anxiety, and I mean, I personally cannot fathom the anxiety that goes with such a diagnosis, but I really wanted to talk to Georgie, who had been through it. She's experienced something that I think so many of us suffer with anxiety in anticipation of, like, one of our greatest fears and one of the greatest drivers of anxiety is the fear of something going wrong physically like that, that we feel that we would be totally out of control. There's nothing we can do about it. It might just strike you down. You know, the fear of it happening and it being a bad diagnosis and something that you can't recover from or bounce back from. I think cancer is public enemy number one, and the anxiety around it is just so huge, whether it's you, whether you're afraid that you'll get it yourself. I mean, I haven't gotten it, and I'm so lucky, and I haven't been touched by it in my life, in my very, very close circle. I've been very lucky, but I know so many people who have been touched by it or who live in fear of it. And I think it's really amazing to hear from Georgie about how she handled the whole thing, and crucially how she handled the mental side of it and the anxiety side of it and the weight of that on her shoulders, and, you know, all of the fear that went along with it, separate to the physical symptoms and the physical manifestation of the cancer. I also wanted to talk to Georgie about hypochondria, because that's something I am, oh my god, I'm the worst for it. I fear every time I feel a bit sick, I think of the worst case scenario. If I have a headache, I think, well, this is it, you're gonna die, your time is up. And I always, always go there. And I think it's really interesting to hear from someone who had probably their worst fear realized, and to hear from them that actually you don't know how well you're going to cope until you're in the situation. And often so much of what we fear is the anticipation of something, and we fear the unknown, and we fear things that haven't or might not happen, more so than the reality. So for Georgie, what happened was when she actually got the cancer diagnosis, she had so much fear beforehand waiting for it. And then when she got it, she was straight into action mode and coping mode and practical mode. And it's been just so inspiring to hear her share her story. And whether cancer is something that has affected you or is affecting you right now or not, or whether you, like me, just tend to worry about your health, and I think a lot of you probably do if you're like me, then I think you will really benefit from this episode. So thank you so much for tuning in. As always, please subscribe and review and send me your feedback. I very much appreciate it. And yeah, enjoy. Georgie is amazing.
It's been such a long time since I've actually just sat in my car and had a chat with my friends.
I have the best chats in cars.
Yeah.
Like when I'm dropping my friends home, because I started driving really young and I was always a designated driver, and when I drop them home, you'd have to build in like an extra half an hour, mm-hmm. because you'd be literally talking shit for like so long after. Like, I have to actually go now. But I'm so, so delighted to have you on the podcast, Georgie. And I was so honoured to be on your podcast, The Good Glow, which is just, obviously, anyone listening to this, I'm sure will have heard of or have already listened to your podcast. And I got so many messages when I did your episode, and people who, you like put so many people in my direction who hadn't really known about my experience of anxiety or the books or anything. So I'm so grateful for that, and have to have been able to help people through your audience as well. But I had obviously wanted to have you on the podcast because you're, first of all, your story is amazing. You are amazing. How you've handled everything that you've been through is amazing. But I wanted to kind of approach your experience of cancer from through the lens of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we both said before we started recording, like, you're not an expert. I'm not an expert. But it's personal experience is what people can relate to and want to hear about, mm-hmm. More so than hearing from the person who has all the qualifications, because they are the you or the me in the situation who just want to know that they're not alone. So I suppose for me, the cancer thing, it's always been such a big, big fear. And I feel like for so many people listening, one of the major anxiety triggers for them is a health scare. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a really bad anxiety, you're probably likely to be a bit of a hypochondriac. Were you like that at all before you got the diagnosis?
Yeah, like there was definitely an element of me that was, you know, scared of things and scared of big things. And I lived in a lovely bubble and everything kind of had worked out for me. So I met Jamie, my husband, who I was so mad about. And we bought a gorgeous house and we had a perfectly healthy child. And, you know, when things are going so well, there is a part of you that's like, oh my God, how did I get so lucky?
Or will this be taken away from me?
Yeah. So I did think like that. And I've always, I suppose, worried about people in my family getting sick. But I kind of thought I was a little bit invincible. And so when I found my lump in the middle of the night and I knew that this was a really serious situation, I kind of couldn't believe it was me.
Yeah.
And it took me so long to get my head around that. And over the past year, I suppose, on my journey, I've realized the importance of self-care. But I've learned so much over the last 18 months that I was saying to my counselor the other day that every second of my life is different now.
Yeah.
Every thought in my brain, you know, after you get better, people just kind of presume you've gone back to normal.
But and you definitely don't. You're kind of changed forever.
Forever.
Before cancer was anything in your life, had you experienced anxiety? Had you ever had a panic attack? What was your level of anxiety? Because I think we all have a level.
Yeah, like I didn't really suffer with my mental health. I always felt very lucky that, you know, I was always just happy, you know. But I did suffer a little bit with separation anxiety. That was kind of where it manifested for me. So if I was away from home or away from Jamie, or when I was younger, being away from my mum. Mm. So that's kind of where I, you know.
So if you went away on a holiday or something, would you feel it?
Yeah.
Just being outside of your comfort zone,
I suppose. Yeah, or, you know, I was an entertainment reporter for Spin, so one time I had to go to LA to a 5 Seconds of Summer conference, and it was this, like, amazing experience, and I love LA, and I feel very at home there. But going on my own as part of a kind of press tour was really scary for me, not to have Jamie there.
Yeah.
And I feel very safe, and I don't have any anxiety when I travel with Jamie and Pia.
On the same.
Yeah, because home is wherever they are.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my only experience really with anxiety before cancer.
And then I suppose people think of cancer as a physical illness, which it is, but the mental aspect of it is so huge. I can only imagine. You said to me before that it was worse when you didn't have the diagnosis, when you were waiting mm-hmm. for it. Talk me through the phase you were at, where you were at, what you were thinking when it occurred to you that something might not be right.
Yeah, so definitely the worst day of my life was the Saturday before my diagnosis. So I'd found the lump. And when I found the lump, I was really, really scared. I knew it was bad news, and I just had this feeling in my gut.
And how old was Pia at this stage?
Pia was 7 months old.
So you probably just thought it was like something to do post-pregnancy.
I hoped it was, yeah. But I knew my body so well, and this lump was so hard. It was bone-like.
Okay.
So it didn't feel like a blocked milk duct or what I would imagine something like that to feel like. So my first thought, the second I found my lump, was breast cancer. And I was basically standing, what I felt like, on a cliff's edge until I got my diagnosis 5 days later, which I feel so incredibly lucky to have gotten a diagnosis so quickly. Some people have to wait months.
And had you been regularly checking your breasts before that?
Never.
Yeah, it's such a thing that, like, you don't think of doing it. Like, until I heard your story, I remember hearing you talk about it for the first time on the radio at Christmas before you went through chemo. And I was like, it literally takes hearing someone else to be like, oh my God, I need to check myself. And like, mm-hmm. none of us are invincible. And there is so much information out there, but it's a fear of, I think it's a fear of going looking for something.
Absolutely. Because you feel like if you don't look at it, it won't look at you.
I know.
Also, I didn't really think breast cancer happened to women under 50. I was like, oh yeah, you know, whenever that screening age is, that's when I'll worry about it.
Yeah.
But no, it is happening to younger people, and 30% of the women who are getting diagnosed with breast cancer now are under the age of 50.
Oh my God.
So it is happening. There's not that many of us, but it is happening. So yeah, look, I, you know, around that time of when I was diagnosed, I tried to stay off Google.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't Googled breast cancer once.
Wow.
I did once, actually. I tell a lie there, but I did once that night that I say was the worst night of my life. I Googled it then before I got my diagnosis, but I haven't Googled it since.
And what was the anxiety like surrounding? Like, did you feel physical panic rise in your body? Did you feel like the mental health, the issue of the fear of the cancer, was as much of a weight on you as the cancer itself?
Yeah, like I felt, the only way I can describe it is like extreme terror, like almost like what I would imagine being in a terrorist attack. Like, I felt so unsafe. Like, I felt like they were going to tell me I was going to die. I felt like I had very little time left with my family. And I suppose I didn't really care what happened to me. I was more worried about everybody else.
Okay.
Like, I knew, look, if I get told I'm going to die, I can deal with it. But what about my child? What about my husband? What about my mom, my stepdad, my brothers? Like, what will life be like for them? And when you have a kid, like, nothing else matters but them.
I remember seeing an Instagram post you put up, just, it was Christmas time and you're in your apartment and you were 9 months pregnant mm-hmm. and you're wearing your black lab. I was like, she's so skinny and perfect and just has this perfectly formed bump. I feel like I'll be just a whale if and when I'm lucky enough to be pregnant. But I remember just thinking, wow, like, it was such a beautiful time in your life. You had gorgeous long brown, you always had the most amazing hair with the most amazing volume, and you know, your wedding was stunning. I had stalked your wedding pictures and asked you several times about your wedding dress. And on the outside anyway, if you can describe a life as seeming to have ticked all the boxes,
yours would have been it.
Mm.
And it's obviously all, there's never a right time to go through that, but there was just a cruelty to the timing that you just brought your beautiful baby girl into the world and felt secure and safe, and then this horrible demon comes and threatens all of that.
Yeah, and that's what I found so hard at the start. It just felt so cruel, the timing of it, because, you know, my baby hadn't even crawled yet. We hadn't had our first Christmas together or her first birthday party. But now, having gone through it and everything I've learned from it, it was all supposed to be this way.
Yeah.
And it's taken me so long to get here, and so long not to feel absolutely terrified every second of the day. But I've worked so hard on accept. I knew straight away I needed to accept the cancer. And that was my first step. And, you know, it's been 18 months now, and I can finally get up in the morning and not feel really scared.
To go back to the day you had the diagnosis, was there any sense of relief in a way of kind of being told, this is what you're dealing with, and then maybe you can get a bit more proactive? Mm-hmm. I imagine, obviously, I can't imagine anything more terrifying than I cannot imagine anything that would floor me more than a cancer diagnosis. But is it true that the worrying about the prognosis before you get it is worse than actually being told the reality of it? Did you just sort of go into action mode?
Absolutely. And the day that the cancer was confirmed, it was almost like a relief because I knew where I stood, and I was getting answers, and I was very reassured by my surgeon who told me that I had cancer, and the cancer liaison nurse that was there on the day. So I left with my cancer diagnosis, but with peace of mind. And at that point, there was a plan, there was structure. I was very much in the mindset of, I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. I felt like I was in very safe hands. So absolutely, I felt extremely supported from that day on. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I went into action mode and I really took control at that point. But yeah, once I got the diagnosis, and same with yourself, like once you figured out where your anxiety was coming from, like you definitely can start to move on.
Yeah, I think like acceptance, like you say, is just, no matter what you're dealing with, is so crucial, and not trying to run away from whatever it is that is your reality right there in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the most empowering thing I think you can do, is to like start to take back control and not hate your body for doing this to you, but try and love it and help it through. What was it like? It was coming up to Christmas, wasn't it? Mm. What was that first Christmas like? You were just about to start your chemotherapy.
Yeah, I started chemo on the 18th of December. So I spent Christmas week in hospital for 3 days because the chemo hit me really hard at the start, and Jamie rushed me back to hospital on the first night.
So like physically sick side effects?
Yeah, physically. I was so nauseous. It was like really bad morning sickness. And that night, the only way I could get relief was on my hands and knees.
Okay.
And at 11:30, Jamie rang my mum and said, you know, will you come up? And mind, Pia, I have to get Georgie back to the hospital. So I knew it was the right place for me. And, you know, at this point, my baby was still getting up twice a night for feeds.
I can't imagine.
So I was so tired. And even though I had so much support, I wanted to be her mum.
Yes.
And I wanted to do everything. And, you know, after I got my cancer diagnosis, I wasn't going to miss a feed. I wasn't going to miss that time with my baby.
Did Pia help to normalize it for you? Because she couldn't have any awareness, but she was still just your little baby girl, and you were still just her mum, and you had your routine together. Did that help take you out of the cancer?
Oh, absolutely. She's the reason I got through it. I still felt happiness and joy, even though I'd cancer. And I said to Jamie, I'm still happier than I've ever been in my life because I have this gorgeous baby. And I'd wake up every day, and her routine, you know, didn't change. She couldn't come to bed with me for a year. So I had to get up every morning and go for a walk. And that literally saved my life. My mum would come with me. We'd go to Marley, we'd go around Stepaside, wherever we were. And the fresh air, the daylight, the routine really helped.
The normalcy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. when you first started to talk about it on social media, I was blown away by how I would kind of expect that it would be easier to come through completely and then with a bit of hindsight be like mm-hmm. a really positive voice for cancer. I don't think I could ever be able to be positive, especially encouraging other people when I'm in the thick of it myself. I never want to compare my experience. Everyone's experience is different, but with my anxiety, it was definitely easier to have some distance from it than to be able to say, this is what helped me, this is what worked. But you, was it a coping mechanism for you to start tracking it and documenting it while you were going through it?
Yeah, and I often wonder, you know, what people think of that. And that gave me anxiety, you know, the fact that I was sharing my story in social media because it wasn't planned. Mm-hmm. So I was such a private person. Despite being on the radio and having a job in the media, nobody knew me before I got sick. And basically what I wanted to do was warn people to check their breasts, my friends on yeah. Instagram and my colleagues. And people had, my friends knew I had cancer and weren't texting me because they didn't hear it from me. So everyone knew that I was sick.
Okay.
But it was silent because like, what could those people do? Like, text me, hey, George, you heard you have cancer. Like, how are you? So my original Instagram post was just to say, guys, I have cancer. I'm okay. But just a warning, breast cancer happens to women under 50. Check your breasts. Mm-hmm. And my friend Susan Keogh in Today FM asked me then to come on and share my story on Today FM, you know, to and help young mums.
Yeah, I was driving when I heard that.
Yeah, that was tough, but very, you know, the right thing for me to do at the time. And I thought about it a lot. And then my friend Dearon Garrahy then shared my story. And it was the day before my first chemo session. So on December 17th, I had, I don't know, 800 followers or whatever. Dearon shared my story or told the story about what was happening to me on her Instagram page. The next morning, as I went into my chemotherapy session, I had 11,000 followers and hundreds wow. of messages of support.
Wow. It was just lift you up completely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, but also freaked me out at the same time. I was like, oh my God, what the hell just happened? I felt like so supported and people going, you know, this happened to me, keep going.
So and
so many survivors. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But yeah, it did bring me anxiety.
Because then there's also the pressure of thinking about what you're putting out there and how people will respond to it. And what I really appreciated from following your story was that you were exactly how you were whenever you were, like, whenever you felt it was what we got. Mm-hmm. You weren't, you know, and I'm just so grateful that you didn't hide the bad days, because like you told me before, you know, you don't want to come across like the perfect cancer survivor or cancer patient. It's everyone's different, and it's totally okay to feel immense fear and terror, like you say. And I remember hearing you on the radio and hearing like the tears coming out of your eyes. And I remember seeing you at all the BO events that we've done together and just being so, it's just amazing that you didn't try and put on a brave face when you were feeling brave and empowered and strong and positive. That's really what you were feeling. You weren't putting it on. And when you were scared, you were really scared and you could hear it. And was that hard? You know, did you think about sort of concealing the fear, or did you want to always be really open and honest for yourself? Was it pressure if you were trying to put a positive thing out there if you weren't feeling it?
When I decided to share my story, and I never really had a moment where I was like, this is what I'm going to do. It just happened quite naturally. And it was, I'd pop on to my Instagram stories like once a week to give an update. I was never on social media in my like oncology ward or in hospitals or anything like that. But I didn't want someone to turn around to their mum and say, why can't you be positive like her all the time? It was really important to me to be authentic and give an absolute fair representation of what was happening. And I wanted to go into chemo and for it to be, you know, not so bad and to get to spread that good message. But it absolutely sucked and it was really hard for 5 months. So I tried to, you know, tell the truth, and that was so important.
And when you were sort of suffering the effects of the chemo and you were very much in your plan of action of, you know, appointments and checkups and stuff, is there no time to really panic about the weight of what's happening?
No, every night. I cried every day during chemotherapy. Every night when I'd put Pia to bed, I'd sit on the couch with Jamie and cry and let it out. Yeah, when you're finished treatment, it does kind of hit you all over again. But I definitely dealt with it every day and, you know, went through every sort of emotion every single day. And I was so scared for so long. And I feel so grateful now that I don't have that fear inside me anymore. Mm. And it's so weird. Like, maybe I have less fear now than I did even before I had cancer.
That's what I was going to ask you, actually, was anytime anyone goes through something hard, one of the first things people say is they try to give them perspective. I think of how much worse off it could be, or, you know, people starving in Africa or someone who's terminally ill. And in a way, sometimes I find that unhelpful because it kind of maybe takes from it, it sort of diminishes what you're going through, and whatever you're going through is relative to you. And I definitely struggled with my anxiety for feeling like I had no right to fall apart when people were dealing with far worse. For you, I imagine like you actually lived the experience of having something life altering that would change your perspective forever. So does it completely change how you react to the day-to-day stresses and trivial stuff of life these days?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I always say Mondays aren't so bad anymore.
Oh, yeah.
it definitely, I'm way less stressed. I mean,
you don't sweat the small stuff?
No, and it's such a cliche, but it's so true. I'm much calmer inside, and I don't know if that's a combination of, it's kind of hard for me to tell sometimes because I became a mum and got cancer at the same time. So I don't know how much being a mom changed me or having cancer changed me, but I'm definitely way less stressed. I don't know if that's to do with the fact that I've been in counselling for 4 months, or I eat better, I'm more hydrated, I'm calmer on the inside because I exercise. So much has changed, but I definitely can go into work now for a full day and not get stressed. I used to get stressed over like stupid things.
Wow. Okay.
But now I'm just like, okay, whatever comes at me, I can handle in a calm way.
You must feel so strong.
Yeah, and I do. And of course, like, I have really bad days, and sometimes the good days are just as hard as the bad days. So for example, my birthday in January was a really hard day, because on those days you're like, I should be feeling this. I should be so happy that I survived cancer and it's my birthday. But I didn't feel like that. I felt really sad on my birthday because it makes you think of everything that's happened.
So is there massive pressure when you come through cancer and you come out the other side to be in great form? You know, pressure maybe from yourself?
Pressure from yourself, yeah, because you're wondering, you know, why aren't I appreciating this moment? And I do appreciate the good times more. So when something great happens, I try to take a minute to go, wow. Or if we're on holidays and I go down to the beach,
I will always take 2 minutes now just to like look inwards and thank God for my life.
So you're far more mindful now.
Mm.
How important do you find that mindfulness and taking that minute is for keeping all the stresses at bay?
Yeah, and my counsellor has really helped me detach from feelings of fear and guilt. So she's told me to label them. So just say, I eat something, a chocolate bar, and I feel guilty for that. She has taught me to go, that's guilty, Georgie, again.
Okay.
Everything's going to be okay. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing bad is going to happen because I did this. So I detach from mm-hmm. that person. And then if I... you know, get very upset about something or I get triggered or, you know, somebody's parent dies of cancer close to me and that freaks me out. She has given me coping mechanisms to know that I'm feeling a certain way because of what has happened to me and that's okay. So just to kind of give myself a break.
Yeah. You spoke to me before about anxiety around feeling like how to be the perfect cancer survivor and what you put out there. Do you feel like that was a while ago? That's when we talked on your podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's sort of simmering or settling down for you?
Yeah, massively. So before I would be really self-conscious if somebody saw me eating a biscuit or...
Why?
Because I would feel like they were looking at me saying, Jesus, she survived cancer and look at her there eating a biscuit.
I would have been like, eat all the biscuits.
I know.
So you, as in like, you need to be taking better care mm-hmm. of yourself. God.
So I was just...
But no, you know, no one ever gave you that reaction. That was just a fear you had.
Yeah, that absolutely. And I was judging myself. Mm. So like, even if someone came over to our house, like on a Saturday morning and I was eating a piece of toast, I would worry about what they were thinking okay. of me. And... through a lot of counselling, I now have given myself a break.
Do you think the stress, which would have been enormous of the whole experience, so I always talk about the brain chemistry and how when you experience stress for a long time, you wear down the sort of more rational thinking part of your brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, which says, Georgie, don't be silly, you can eat this piece of toast. And your amygdala is the more fear inducing, where we have worry in our brain, is kind of in charge. And putting all these fearful thoughts into your mind and telling you to judge yourself and stuff. Do you think that maybe it was going to take a while for your brain to get the strength back mm-hmm. after being worn down?
That is such a good point. And yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's so many times now where I have to tell myself I'm doing the best job I can. And that gives me peace and that kind of calms me down a little bit when I'm feeling completely worried.
Yeah.
I say, you know, I'm doing the best I can. I've eaten, you know, loads of healthy food this week and I can eat this pizza and yeah. not worry about it. Because mm-hmm. in fact, the stress of worrying about it was probably doing me more damage.
Yeah. So you come through the physical illness, but the mental side of it is a lifelong mm-hmm. management, right? I mean, you have to check in with yourself every day.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What advice do you have for people who, like me, I mean, I spend so much time worrying about things that will probably never happen to me physical health wise. Mm. I had a freckle. I thought it was a freckle. I actually thought it was a piece of dirt on my toe and it just looked really black. And like people laugh at me, like my family, and they're like, oh, Jesus, Caroline, you know, you think you're dying. And I'm like, well, what if I am? Like, what if this is the one time mm-hmm. or if I have a migraine or headache, you know, once off, I think, what if this is the one time that it's a brain tumor? And I really torment myself. And I know there's some people like me. And I know, and people probably listen to me like, oh, you know, don't be ridiculous. People actually do get diagnosed with these things. But what advice do you have for people who have those kind of worries where you don't want to ignore something, but you also don't want to drive yourself mad thinking of the worst case scenario all the time?
Yeah, it's so hard for me to answer that. I suppose what I would say is try not, like anxiety is worrying about something that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
And if something bad happens in your life, maybe you're going to handle it much better than you ever thought you would. And you don't know until you're in that situation. I don't know if that helps
that is,
at all.
No, I think that's so right. And I mean, even on like a much, much smaller scale, I have this really bad fear of vomiting. And when I get nauseous, I like really, really panic. And I must wake up several nights a week and say to Barry, I think I'm going to be sick. And he's like, you're not, you never get sick. And then, like, just before Christmas, I had caught the norovirus or something. And I was like, oh my God, this is like my biggest fear. It's actually happening now. And I was so shaking so much. I was so afraid of getting sick. And then I was like, almost in a way relieved when I did, because I was like, oh, well, it's happening now and you're handling it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a million miles away. But I do think there is some truth to the anticipation and the worry of something often being more hard to handle than the reality.
Yeah. And I worry every day about my cancer coming back. Of course I do. But when I feel like that, I tell myself, I bring myself back to the present moment. And I feel in this moment, everything is well. I feel good inside. And that's what I have to keep doing, is bring myself back to the now and tell myself that everything is okay in this moment.
And I think that's such a crucial tool for anyone with any kind of anxiety listening, and actually maybe having gone through that and having that awareness and that ability to always pull yourself back into the moment. Maybe that means you won't experience anxiety like someone else over something that, you know, that isn't cancer, because you have that training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, do you feel, I mean, I believe that you are capable of handling anything that that life throws at you now.
Yeah, like, I am, I think, but I do worry about, oh God, like, what if something else happens? And I suppose we don't know how we're going to react until it happens. And I never thought that I would be such a positive cancer patient. My God, never did I think I would. But when it happened to me, that's how I felt. And I kind of fought back with strength. And I felt so blessed that that's the way I reacted. And I know everybody doesn't react the same way. Even though when I was in a hole, I always felt blessed that I could see the light, because I could see the light and I didn't know why this was happening to me. But I knew that one day I'd know why, and one day I would get answers. So I just hung in there and tried, you know, to get out, get some air, continue on as best I could. And one day I would get answers. And I do feel like I have answers now.
Mm. What's the best piece of advice you've been given on this whole journey? It can be from Oprah.
Do you know what? It's not from Oprah. It's from Tony Robbins. So the night that I found out my cancer didn't spread, which was the most incredible night, I stumbled across the Tony Robbins documentary on Netflix. And at the very end, he said, life doesn't happen to you. Life happens for you.
Mm.
And that was the moment for me that everything changed.
So do you believe you really are on like a path, and we all are, and we're meant to go through these things to figure out who we are and find out who we are?
Absolutely. And
that's quite a hard pill to swallow.
Mm.
When you're facing a diagnosis, or if someone is struggling with anxiety unrelated to cancer, it's very hard to be told you're meant to be going through this. And I say to people now as well all the time, like, from my experience, I know myself better now than I ever would have. I know my limits, I know my strengths, my weaknesses. I've got so much more respect for myself,
mm-hmm.
and appreciation for maybe the fact that I'm a sensitive person, and, you know, I have a low threshold for stress and that kind of thing, and I work with it rather than against it. But it's probably one of the hardest lessons you can learn in life, but it is so true, like you say, that I also do believe, I mean, I don't believe in much kind of kooky stuff and, you know, all the mm-hmm. different, but I do believe that things happen for a reason, and that's so hard to take sometimes, but I think it helps you get beyond what you're going through now.
Yeah, and I've learned so much from having cancer, and I used to say, maybe I'm just a messenger for this.
Yeah.
Maybe I was chosen to be the voice of you know, cancer under 50s. But look, I still wonder how I got the cancer, why I got the cancer.
Why did it happen to you?
Why did it have to happen to me? And of course, I still have those moments. Everything in my life has changed for the better, and I value my life so much more. So I get up and I make sure that I'm hydrated, and I make sure that I'm eating well and exercising well and giving myself the best chance at survival. But yeah, like, sometimes I suppose the biggest questions are left unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
But I just bring myself back to the moment, and right now I'm okay and I'm doing the best job that I can.
How is life right now?
So my baby is 2 this week.
People can't see this, but a huge smile just broke across your face when I asked you that question.
This feels like the moment
that we're back to normal.
Your new normal.
Yeah, it's a weird week because I feel nothing but happiness this week. And, you know, as I was saying, my own birthday, I wasn't great. And, you know, Christmas was fine, but I just felt under a lot of pressure that, you know, it was my first Christmas being better. And should I be doing this? And should I be doing that? And why don't I feel like this? But this Pia's birthday, I remember last year, I just lost all my hair. I was in a wig. I really felt awful. But obviously, I enjoyed the day. But this is the moment, I think, on Saturday when we have a little birthday party for her, that I'm going to feel like I made it. That everything is kind of slotting back to normal now, and I've got my happiness back. Amazing. But we'll see. Maybe I won't feel like that, but I'm hoping. Like,
life is a series of struggles and lulls, and it ebbs and flows. And, like, you know, you're so good at being in the moment. You're really happy right now. Maybe you won't feel so happy in a week's time, but then you'll feel happy again. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is ever permanent. Nothing is ever fixed. Everything will pass, even good and bad. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just so important to, you have just such a good sense of awareness. What would be your main piece of advice for if people are listening who are, obviously the theme of the podcast is anxiety, but anxiety comes in many forms, and there's obviously a huge amount of anxiety surrounding a cancer diagnosis, whether it's the person listening or maybe it's a family member or a friend. If you could say one thing to that person to help them get up and go to the doctor and follow through with their appointments and like just get up every day, what would it be?
So I suppose knowledge is power. I mean, we can put off these appointments because we're afraid, but it's still going to happen to us. So I feel so lucky. I'd stage 2 cancer. I feel so lucky that I found it very early on and I didn't ignore my lump, but it was only going to get worse.
Yeah.
So you do have to face things head on and do it for yourself, do it for your family. You know, I say now that I have to hand Pia over and go to the gym or do, you know, something for myself. And I feel so guilty. I want to be with her every second, but I'm doing this in order to be with her for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do have to prioritize ourselves and put ourselves higher on our own to-do list, because once you know, then you can act upon, you know, whatever is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And before I let you go, do you find yourself these days, if the cancer is completely out of your mind and you're in work and something goes wrong, and you know, I know you said you don't really get stressed, but if you find yourself getting worked up about something, are you grateful that it's something like that that can kind of get to you? Or if you're giving out about something, are you like, wow, I'm giving out about spilling milk?
Yeah, it's kind of nice to have normal problems again.
Yeah.
And to feel normal, you know, that like, I definitely still wake up on the wrong side of bed and, you know, give out to Jamie over something stupid. But I do, I suppose, catch myself more. But I'm not perfect, yeah. And it is great to have normal problems again.
Amazing. Georgie, thank you so much for joining me. I know that your story will just resonate with so many people, as it already has done. And The Good Glow will be back for season 2.
Yeah, season 2. And thank you for your podcast, because I have listen to it. I find it brilliant, and thanks for your honesty and, you know, everything that you've done for me and our podcast together. I got such amazing feedback, because, you know, not a lot of people talk about their problems, and you've really put yourself out there in such a graceful way. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to my episode with the amazing and beautiful inside and out Georgie Crawford. Her podcast, The Good Glow, is available wherever you listen to your podcast. It really is amazing. It was number 1 in Ireland for quite a while, and you can check out my episode with her there if you want to cross-pollinate your podcasts. As always, thank you so much for listening. Really, really grateful for any feedback, subscribes and reviews on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Next up, I will be talking about medication with psychiatrist Dr. Rosie Plunkett. And this is a very, very important episode coming. So I do hope you stay tuned, and thank you again.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.